Good morning and welcome to the California Coastal Commission meeting, Friday, December 11th. And could we please have the roll call?
Commissioner Shajian.
Present.
Commissioner Blank.
Here.
Commissioner Bloom. Commissioner Secor.
Present.
Commissioner Mercurimi. Commissioner Sanchez.
Here.
Commissioner Schellenberger. Commissioner Stone.
Here.
Commissioner Wan.
Here.
Chair Neely.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. Let's see. We did have one general public comment slip, but I think the vice chair's misplaced it. But we'd like to call Mark Massara up to the podium. I think, as you all know, Mark has been a longtime advocate for the Sierra Club. And Mark, we understand that this may be your last meeting with us as their advocate, and we wanted to thank you for the great work you've done as a strong advocate, and maybe just give you a bad time for a few minutes. Vice Chair?
Well, I just have to say I think we'll miss your going straight to the issue. We'll miss your turn of phrase, we will miss you before us. So hopefully in your new role, as you go on to many new jobs, you find an opportunity to continue to be an advocate for us and for coastal protection.
Mr. Wan?
I certainly will miss you. I've known you all of these years, including the years that we worked together as advocates out there. And I'll miss you because of who you are and how you've conducted yourself. But I think the commission will also miss the presence of an advocate. Government really, to work properly, needs to hear from both sides. And you have really been a strong and consistent voice on behalf of protecting coastal resources. And we will miss that.
Commissioner Blank?
Yes, Madam Chair. Mark, you know, I've described you to others as kind of the bow shock of environmental and coastal protection. The rest of us catch up later, and a bow shock usually is the compressed air in the front of a missile or something going at hypersonic speeds that the rest of the body catches up with. And I think that's been your role, at least since I've been on the commission, is calling it sometimes before the rest of us ever see it. And at times, I've found it incredibly annoying, irritating, but always correct, which made it doubly irritating. So we are going to miss you. The coast, unfortunately, will be worse with your departure. And I'm incredibly jealous of whoever got you. So thank you for your contributions.
Commissioner Stone?
Thank you. Mark, I'd like to thank you for your work with Sierra Club, and I think what we should be doing is sort of mourning the loss of the program at the Sierra Club, because I don't think we're going to be missing Mark. I think Mark's going to be before us on many different occasions and many different issues, just potentially in a different role, but still a staunch advocate for the coast, and we appreciate what you've done with Sierra Club and look forward to working with you on future issues.
Commissioner Sanchez?
Mark, we met back in 2000 at the Queen Mary, and I've always seen you as a very honorable advocate of the people of this state of California and this country. Thank you.
And Commissioner Mercurimi?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mark, you are what is everything right about, I think, a very sensible and yet visionary environmental movement. I know we'll continue to see you in whatever capacity, I trust that, but similarly to Commissioner Stone's comments, I think in many ways the environmental movement in this country has gone completely soft and slightly haywire. That the Sierra Club would actually eliminate its Coastal Watch program is absurd beyond belief. And that I think that for good people who have the kind of talent, skill, professionalism, and unwavering dedication like yourself and others, I think that this typifies a trend nationally in where environmental organizations are going. So they all want to have postcard campaigns, whether it's Greenpeace or Sierra Club and others, to try to get the national leaders or international leaders to do something about climate change. They got to wake up. Mark, we know you'll be there with us.
Director Douglas?
So, Madam Chair, when the Coastal Act was being drafted back in 1971 and 72, one of the fundamental elements was public participation. There was no question that what happens to the coast is a public interest, a public issue, and should involve not only transparency of process, but public advocacy and involvement. And that's been one of the hallmarks of the coastal program. And I think, I mean, when I am asked what the accomplishments of the Coastal Commission are, among those things that you don't see is the empowerment of citizen activists to participate in the program in terms of advocating for strong coastal protection. The problem has been that it's costly to do that. It's not a free of cost to come to all these meetings to get the background, to be informed. And when you look at the history of advocacy before this commission, we have had basically one person for a period of time, and that's it. We had Commissioner Wan before she was a commissioner. She was paying out of her own pocket to be at commission meetings, advocating public access and public interest and habitat issues. And we had Susan Jordan for a while doing that, and Mark Massara. Mark has been doing this for over 10 years. I forget how many years you've been doing it. And as Commissioner Blank said, sometimes your pithy, colorful hitting the mark or being off the mark is irritating. But the role that you play that's so important is keeping our institutional feet to the fire and keeping us honest, because you've been there at all these meetings. And when an issue comes up that nobody else brings to the attention of the commissioners, you stand up for what you believe needs to be taken into consideration by the commission. And I think that's a very valuable public service, not just to this commission, but to the public and the coast. And I agree with those who've said that it's a real travesty that the Sierra Club thought this was an area where they could cut their funding so that they could do other things. I think that's very short-sighted. I'm sorry that we're going to miss you here. You're not going to be here. I know that you'll probably come back in another incarnation in the not-too-distant future, and I hope that happens. And I hope that there will be a successor to the work that you've been doing, because this commission would really be impoverished by the absence of that kind of advocacy. So thank you for doing. And the other thing is, too, Mark was paid so little. I know that because I've asked him over the years. The amount of personal sacrifice that it's taken to do the work that he's been doing, that's to me, very noble work. And thank you for doing that, Mark.
Thank you, Mark. And Commissioner Markarimi?
Just an afterthought. I understand that Carl Pope is leaving the Sierra Club, who's the executive director of the Sierra Club. We'd be glad to write you a recommendation for that post.
May I make a comment?
Yes.
Madam Chair, Commissioners, thank you. This is overwhelming. The privilege has been mine. This has been a luxury as an environmental lawyer to be able to do this work over the last 17 years, and before that with Surfrider Foundation. I want to thank you because even though Sierra Club has been gracious enough to fund all of this work all of these years, it's been the commission and staff that have essentially been my workplace and my family for all of this work. And to be able to work with you on literally thousands of projects over all of these years on the most cutting edge environmental issues in the United States, on everything from offshore oil and gas and liquid natural gas terminals, sonar, resorts, golf courses, ports development, development and protection of resources in our communities up and down the coast has been something that every environmental lawyer would love to have the opportunity to do. And for me, it's been just one big, great ball of fun. And I want to thank you for indulging me in this process. And You're right, you know, you haven't seen the last of me. I'm going to find a way to continue to preach environmental protection and sustainability because it's good for the economy. And I think we've proven that over and over again here, and I want to thank you for that opportunity. And especially thank Priscilla, because I'm confident that her entire basement is filled up with transcripts of all of my three-minute speeches. And I just really want to say I've appreciated the opportunity and look forward to working with you in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. All the best. And now we'll go ahead and start with the agenda, and maybe staff could go over any changes and the ground rules for the hearings.
Yes, good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. Changes for today. On page 14, item 7A has been postponed. And on page 15, we are recommending that items 8, B, C, and D be moved to the consent calendar. Items B and C concern, B and D concern existing revetments or seawalls that are going to be repaired and upgraded, but we are in agreement with the applicants, including Caltrans, on 8D, and do not believe there are any significant issues prejudiced by those items. With respect to today's hearing, members of the public that wish to speak to the commission today do need to fill out a speaker slip and indicate which item you are speaking to and whether you are in support or in opposition of the staff recommendation. And also, please, if you have a cell phone or other noise-making electronic device, please turn it off or put it into a mode that won't interrupt the meeting. Oh, and finally, being asked to remind people that there's no eating or drinking in this facility.
Okay, thank you, staff. Go ahead and start with the director's report.
That would bring us to the Central Coast District, and under the deputy director's report, I do have three minor items to report, one regular waiver, one immaterial amendment, and one immaterial extension, and I'm not aware of any objections to those items.
Is there any objection with concurrence with the executive director? Seeing none, the commission concurs.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I was remiss in not at the beginning telling you another little update on an issue that came up on the first day, and that's relative to the question of doing a report on where the in-lieu fee funds that the commission has required over the years have been spent and how they've been spent. Susan heard that, and she has told me that she found a way to hire an intern for a limited period of time to do that research. It's complex, and I'm not going to go into all the reasons why that is. I'm just delighted that she was able to find a way to get it done. And so we'll bring his work back to you in the not-too-distant future.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Blank?
I just want to thank the executive director for being so responsive at the same hearing, and I personally appreciate it. I'm sure the rest of the commissioners do as well. Thank you.
Well, and I thank Susan for picking up on it and immediately finding a way to get it done.
Yes.
That would bring us to item 5, which is the consent calendar. And as I just mentioned, we are recommending that items 8B, 8C, and 8D be moved to the consent calendar.
All right. First, let me ask if there are any ex parte communications regarding consent calendar items. Commissioner Shajian?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On December 3rd, the morning hours, I met with Sandra Brazil and Margaret Ambrosavich from ORCA SLO. Their concern was item F8A. The recommendation was to support staff's findings. Their issues were with water supplies, impact on endangered species, traffic impacts, and that the EIR is now 11 years old and is inadequate. On item 8C, during the same time, I met with Bert Caldwell, who's the applicant. Also joining him was Mayor Peters from the City of Morro Bay, Pete Candela, Morro Bay Chamber, and Rob Scholz, the city attorney, Steve, the architect, and they were obviously supportive of the project. Brought to my attention that this is an exceptional public recreational visitor serving access project with components that will be sited and designed in such a way as to provide maximum public benefit at this important public site along Morro Bay and the Embarcadero. And they were very thankful of staff's cooperation. They said their vision was a little different than what it has ended up, but that was because of this. They find the Coastal Commission staff's vision to be a better one.
All right, thank you, Commissioner. Any other commissioners with ex partes on the consent calendar items? Seeing none, we have one speaker slip, representative from Caltrans, but that's just for answering questions. So if there, what's the will of the commission? Commissioner Secord?
Move approval.
Move the approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Secord, a second by Commissioner Shajian. The maker and seconder recommending yes vote. Is there any objection to a unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the consent calendar is approved.
Thank you. Item 6A is the San Luis Obispo County LCP amendment time extension. This is Major Amendment 3-09 concerning the framework for planning update, and we are recommending that the time be extended for up to 1 year.
All right. Thank you. Are there any ex parte communications on item 6A? Seeing none, we have no speaker slips. The pleasure of the commission. Commissioner Shajian.
Madam Chair, I move that the commission extend the time limit to act on San Luis Obispo County Local Coastal Program Amendment Number 3-09 to December 30, 2010. Recommend a yes vote.
We have a motion by Commissioner Shajian, a second by Commissioner Mercurimi. The maker and seconder are recommending a yes vote. Is there any objection to a unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the time extension is approved.
So item 6B is a time extension for City of Capitola LCP Amendment 2-09 Part 1 concerning Affordable Housing Overlay District, and we are recommending that the time be extended for up to 1 year.
All right, thank you. Any ex parte communications on item 6B? Seeing none, we have no speaker slips on this item. Commissioner Shajian?
Madam Chair, I move that the commission extend the 90-day time limit to act on City of Capitola Local Coastal Program Major Amendment Number 2-09 Part 1 to January 19, 2011. Recommend a yes vote.
We have a motion by Commissioner Shajian, a second by Commissioner Mercurimi. The maker and seconder are recommending a yes vote. Is there any objection to a unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the time extension is approved.
And similarly, item 6C is a time extension for City of Capitola LCP Amendment 2-09 Part 2, Mixed Uses and Commercial Community Commercial District, and we are recommending that it be extended for up to 1 year.
All right. Thank you, staff. Any ex parte communications on item 6C? Seeing none, we have no speaker slips on this item. Commissioner Shajian?
I move that the commission extend the 60-day time limit to act on City of Capitola Local Coastal Program Major Amendment Number 2-09 Part 2 to December 20, 2010. Recommend a yes vote.
We have a motion by Commissioner Shajian, second by Commissioner Mercurimi. The maker and seconder are recommending a yes vote. Passage of the motion will result in extension of the time limit. Any objections to unanimous roll call vote on this item? Seeing none, the time extension is approved.
Thank you. That brings us to item 8A. And there is a PowerPoint presentation for this item. There also is an addendum in your packet concerning some responses to the applicant's submittal. And also I wanted to point out there's correspondence in your district director's report largely concerning this item. Item 8A is an appeal of a residential and visitor-serving resort development in the city of San City. The commission previously denied a project in 2000. But after many years of litigation, this appeal has been remanded back to the commission by the appeals court for reconsideration. The commission is currently under an order from the court to hear or hold a hearing on the remanded matter by the end of this month. It's been pointed out that the wrong PowerPoint is presenting. And as I was saying, we are under a court order to have a hearing on this item by the end of this month. However, the applicant is requesting a continuance of this matter to some point in the future when the water permitting issues with the Monterey Peninsula Regional Water District may be resolved. We've addressed the request for the continuance in the addendum, but we would recommend that the commission, before proceeding with the hearing, allow the applicant to present his concerns concerning the request for continuance.
take up the issue of the continuance first? The request is before the commission at this time. Ma'am, could you just state your name for the record, and you're going to address us on behalf of the applicant? Okay.
Sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the commission. Sherry Damon, Damon Law Offices, on behalf of Security National Guarantee. And yes, I would like to address the continuance. We made this request to the commission previously, last month, or in October, and at that time the commission decided not to take it up in closed session. We reiterate that request to the commission that you agree to extend the date for return of the writ so the hearing can be had on a date which is mutually agreeable to both parties. We believe, contrary to staff's interpretation of the writ, that the original writ and the provisions of the original writ require mutual agreement of the parties. The date for return to the writ, which is what staff has outlined as the court order, can be changed by mutual agreement. And in fact, both the commission and the applicant have previously agreed on two occasions to extend the date to submit any update to compliance to the original writ to the court. Given the overall status on the water distribution permit and the pending litigation involving that, and the staff position in their report that no project can be adequately evaluated until the water distribution permit and the water issues are addressed on the coast, we reiterate that request again that the commission agree to extend the date for return. The applicant has diligently been pursuing bringing the water distribution permit issue to completion. In May, when you previously agreed to extend the writ return, it was on the basis that the water distribution permit was not resolved. The applicant has diligently been working when the Monterey Peninsula Water Management District appealed the trial court's decision ruling in favor of the applicant on its water distribution permit issues. The applicant forced an early preparation of the record with the Court of Appeal and successfully filed and was granted a motion to expedite in the Court of Appeal. What that means is that the Court of Appeal has agendized this by court order for an expedited hearing. In reviewing the Court of Appeal's schedule, it is on their case conference list. What that means is the case is fully briefed and it's ready to be heard by the Court of Appeal. I expect that to be heard in March of this coming year. So if the commission so directed, the applicant would agree to modify the date for return to the writ to allow for resolution of that water issue with attendant time for staff to review that decision and manage its calendar appropriately. Staff contends in a supplemental report that I just received late yesterday morning that it will be prejudiced if the commission grants an extension because valuable staff resources have been taken up in litigation proceedings and that future unidentified projects will be prejudiced by calendaring conflicts. However, if the project is denied, there will be continuing litigation. And if, alternatively, as suggested by staff or urged by staff in its report, a new project application comes forward, there will be an impact on future unidentified staff resources. Instead, the position seems to be in favor of its own convenience instead of providing the applicant with a fair evaluation of the project as modified after the water permit is resolved. Staff's concerns regarding calendaring issues can certainly be addressed in any agreement that we might reach on extension to the return of the writ. Furloughs and limited resources are tough on everyone, not just the coastal staff. As a sole proprietor, just coming on to this case, I've had difficulty in reviewing and accessing information relied upon by staff in its over several hundred page report. All of the documents were not contained in the project's files, and despite my request that I be allowed to review all documents that were relied upon by staff, they were not made available. When I received the staff report, the district offices were closed for a full week. So, like you, this is the first time I have seen that report. It's over 500 plus pages of staff report, and we are hopeful you will support a continuance on this. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. The applicant has requested a continuance, and so I just put that before the commission at this time. Is there any interest in addressing this request?
Madam Chair.
I think council might have a question first, or staff.
I just wanted to point the commission to the addendum that you all received on the first page. Staff has addressed, I believe, all of the points that were raised by Ms. Damon in her continuance request. And if there are any further questions, we would be happy to address them.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I also would recommend that the commission hear from the City of Sand City that has requested to speak to this question.
Okay. Is there a representative from the city that would like to speak to this question of a continuance? We could give you 3 minutes, sir, if that works.
Yes, thank you. Steve Matarazzo, City Administrator and Community Development Director for Sand City. Thank you, Madam Chair and Commission. As the letter from the mayor states, our city has been working with the Coastal Commission now for over 20 years to implement our LCP, certified LCP. For those of you who know and don't know Sand City, it's a redevelopment project area. And at the time this LCP was drafted, over 650 units of visitor serving and residential use were allowed on this property. Since that time, the commission came out with a 1990 periodic review that stated that those sorts of densities were too high and recommended that development be clustered either south of this Tioga, which your maps show, or north of Tioga. We got into a 1996 memorandum of understanding with the Parks Agency, as urged by then Senate Majority Whip Henry Mello, and we came up with two development envelopes that were acceptable to the Coastal Commission, and as a result, an LCP amendment was adopted by your commission. Also, since that time, I've cited numerous approvals that your commission has given to the Sand City. We're very cooperative in working with you. We needed water supply back in 2005. You came up with 50 criteria that you'd look at for approving desal plants. Ours was the first one out of the chute. We met those criteria and unanimously approved our desal project. And I think it's since been a model for other desal projects coming before you. In essence, we have tried very hard to work with your commission. We'd like to continue to work with your commission and staff to resolve this project. It's a very important project to us. It's required for our economic development and redevelopment activities. My staff report and the letter from the mayor talks about all of the policies in our LCP that encourage development, and there's standards in our LCP that do that on this site in particular, and we feel your staff is misinterpreting a lot of our LCP, and we'd like a series of meetings with your staff so we can come to some common ground. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And Commissioner Juan?
I just wanted to ask a question.
Okay.
And that is, do we need a motion to say that we do not want?
We only need a motion, I think, if the commission chooses to continue the item.
No,
and
I don't
so
want to
I'll just call once again. Is there, you know, is the commission requesting to take any commission requesting that we take action on this item? Okay, seeing none, then I think we'll just go on with the hearing, staff.
Thank you. Thank you. If I could get slide one back up, please. As I mentioned at the outset, this matter is on remand from the appellate court to the commission for a rehearing. The primary issue in that decision was a determination by the court that there was not any environmentally sensitive habitat areas on the site. But I wanted to highlight that the commission is only limited in that one respect, and the staff report goes into some detail about that decision and how it restricts the commission in this case. Otherwise, the commission is obligated to review the project for consistency with the LCP, as it normally would do, and with the Coastal Act public access and recreation policies, because it is seaward of the first public road. Next slide, please. The project location, the site is located in the city of Sand City on the central coast of California, and if I had my pointer here, you could see that Sand City is just at the northern edge of that cluster of cities in the southern Monterey Bay. Next slide. Here's a closer view of the southern Monterey Bay, and the circle indicates the general location of the project site. Immediately up coast of the site is the Fort Ord State Park, about a 900-plus acre state park. The site is located at the northern edge of Sand City. To the south is Seaside and the cities of Monterey, Pacific Grove. Next slide, please. This is a closer view of the site. The site is approximately 39 acres. This photo also shows you the approximation of the parcel lines for the site. There's about 1,500 feet of linear ocean frontage on the site. You can also tell from this slide that the site is made up of dune sand, and Highway 1 is to the lower right, just inland of the site. Next slide, please. This is an oblique view of most of the site. As you can see, again, the site constitutes sand, and also you can see here the evidence of the former sand mine that was once on this site. Sand mining stopped in 1986. In the right middle portion of the site, you can see a large pit, which is an artifact of that sand mining that had been occurring. Highway 1, again, is in the background. Next slide, please. In terms of the project description, this is one thing we'll continue to come back to. Is this is a large resort project, mixed-use project, 360,000 square feet approximately, including residential and visitor-serving units, 341 units. Those are comprised of 161 hotel rooms, 180 condominium units, 92 of which are residential, 88 of which would be visitor-serving. Residential units like timeshares or available for rental. Includes a restaurant, conference center, and spa, three swimming pools, recreation and access amenities, and parking for approximately 841 vehicles. 762 of those spaces would be underground. The project also would involve approximately 693,000 cubic yards of grading, 14 acres of dune restoration, and 9 acres of landscaping and vegetated roofs. Next slide. This is an artist's rendering of the project from the applicant's EIR, an addendum to the EIR. As you can see, the project is described as an eco-resort and is being designed to include a lot of environmentally sustainable design techniques, including vegetated roofs, landscaping, vegetated swales for water quality, groundwater recharge, renewable energy technologies such as wind, solar, and geothermal. Staff would like to acknowledge these design elements, and particularly the significance of these changes from the last proposal that was considered by the Commission in 2000. Nonetheless, we do want to emphasize that this is a large development, and I'll get into some detail on that. Next slide, please. This is a conceptual drawing of the project, and you can get a better sense of the scale of the components of the buildings. The hotel room, 160 rooms, is located in the lower right quadrant. And towards the back there, we have visitor-serving condominiums, and over to the upper left are the residential condominiums and residential component. Next slide, please. This is a plan view of the project. The lower portion of the site is approximately 22 acres, with that line that bisects the site indicates that below that is the 22-acre portion. To the left of this site plan, again, is where the hotel units would be located. The entryway would come in at the bottom center of the site. There's parking for public access over to the right, on the bottom right. And then the residential components are primarily located to the right on the site plan. Next slide, please. A little more detail on the nature of the units. The project is designed in modules, and this needs to be considered when thinking about the scale of the units being proposed. The 161 hotel units, for example, would be approximately 575 square feet each. There would be 88 one- to two-bedroom units of approximately 1,150 square feet, 62 two-bedroom units of approximately 1,725 square feet, and 33 bedroom units of approximately 2,300 square feet. If you do the calculations, that results in an approximate square footage of 370,000 square feet, which is a little bit more than what the project description is. Next slide, please. These are elevations from the applicant's submittal. The one on the top is the west elevation, looking what the how the project would profile from the shoreline view. And you can see that's an approximate 1,000 foot frontage of buildings that would present as 4 to 6 story structures. Next slide. These are some additional elevations of cross sections through the proposed development, giving you a sense of the scale of the buildings in relationship to some of the dune landforms in the vicinity. Next slide. The site is in the LUP and the IP zoned, designated and zoned for mixed visitor serving commercial and residential land uses. It makes clear that there is a potential density of 650 units, 25 units per acre, but that these densities are maximums. And policy 6.4.1 states clearly that the permitted development intensity shall be limited to those which adequately address constraints. So that's an important one considering what's appropriate on this particularly constrained site. Next slide. The first major issue that we would like to discuss are public services, and in particular water. The LUP requires that water and sewer services be available and adequate for new development. And also with respect to water, policy 4.3.27 requires the use of private wells must analyze and prevent impacts on other wells in the seaside aquifer, and that this analysis must also be approved by the Monterey Peninsula Water Management District. Next slide. In terms of the water supply issues here, the applicant is proposing to supply the water with water from the CalAM system, but the basis for this water would be an allocation premised on the ongoing or historic use of an on-site well. So the water wouldn't be supplied from the well itself on the site, but that entitlement that has resulted from an adjudication in the basin would be the basis for getting that amount of water back from CalAM. Overall, in terms of the water supply issues, the water is very constrained in both the Seaside Groundwater Basin and the Carmel River, which is relevant to this particular case because the applicant's proposing water that effectively would come from the CalAM system. CalAM does get most of its water from the Carmel River, and you may have heard recently that the State Water Resources Control Board recently issued a cease and desist order for further withdrawals from the CalAM River system due to overdrafting impacts to anadromous fisheries in general, negative adverse impacts on the riparian values of that river. So both of these basins are in extreme overdraft, and that's a constraint that is affecting the ability of the applicant to date to get a water permit distribution approval from the water district in Monterey. The water issue under the LCP is a necessary but not sufficient condition. Because the applicant has not received a water distribution permit, staff is recommending denial based on the lack of adequate water for this project. And we can go into more detail on the basis of the water and some of the issues later if the commission would like. Next slide. Notwithstanding the lack of an adequate water supply, there are many other serious constraints and issues that need to be addressed on this site that are warrant the staff's recommendation of denial at this time. The first major issue is coastal hazards, and in particular coastal erosion. This is a brief summary of some of the LUP policy requirements. In particular, developments must be sited and designed to minimize risk from geologic and flood hazards. Both the LUP and the IP require that setbacks for development minimize coastal erosion risks, and they must protect development for its economic life, which has to be at least 50 years. Further, development should be denied if hazards cannot be mitigated, and approved only if project density reflects the degree of the on-site hazard. And finally, 6.4.1, again, LCP development densities are maximums and shall be limited to adequately address natural hazards. Next slide, please. This is a slide from the LUP, and this basically shows the project site and the reality that this site is made up of sand, beach sand, dune sand, or historic dune sand. Next slide. In terms of erosion at this site, the site in Sand City is located in southern Monterey Bay, where some of the highest erosion rates in the states have been documented. You may recall dealing with the Ocean Harbor House case further down coast, the Monterey Beach Hotel, and some of you may be familiar with erosion at Fort Ord, immediately up coast of the site. Historic observations in the immediate vicinity of the project site suggest that erosion rates range from 2.6 to 6.4 feet a year. Erosion is also highly episodic and coincides with storms and high tides, and in this area can be extreme. For example, there's data that shows in the 1998 El Nino there was a massive loss of sand from the system due to the storm and high tide coincidence in that El Nino event. Coastal erosion is also highly sensitive to sea level rise assumptions here, given the nature of the site and the erodibility of the sand, so that depending on what you assume about how much sea level rise we may see in the future, it can significantly change the results of that erosion analysis. And finally, erosion on this site cannot be considered adequately without considering the role of sand mining potentially in affecting how the sand is erosion rates have occurred over time. There was at one point more sand mining in other sites in the vicinity. There still is sand mining north in Marina, and this site itself was also a location of a sand mine. Next slide, please. This is one exhibit from the staff report. We have three different exhibits in the staff report that extrapolate the various observed historic erosion rates onto the site for three different time periods, 50, 75, and 100 years. Based on our analysis of the best available site-specific evidence, as detailed in the staff report, and the various uncertainties, including the acceleration of global sea level rise and considering the sand mining issue, we don't believe the applicant's proposed 50-year setback for coastal erosion is adequate. To begin with, 50 years is problematic in one respect, because we think that the commission ought to be thinking of, in this case, in terms of an economic life closer to 75 or longer, given the nature of and the scale of this development. 50 years is on the bottom end of the typically assumed economic life that you will find in LCPs. In the Central Coast, most of the LCPs have minimum economic lifetime evaluation requirements of 75 to one, up to 100 years. So in this case, 50 years, assuming a 50-year life of the project, we believe is a minimal and not conservative approach with respect to this highly erodible site. Further and related, the applicant hasn't specified an economic life to us either, although he has stated in materials and verbally to staff that he would intend that components of the project that are placed in risk in the future would be relocated or removed. However, we have no details on how that would be implemented. So, in effect, the applicant has said the economic life of the project is as long as it is not in danger from erosion. Based on all of the factors that we've considered, we believe the most risk-averse strategy, i.e. one that would minimize risk as required by the LCP in this extremely erodible location, is to assume an erosion rate closer to the higher historically observed rate, 6.4 feet a year, and use an economic life of 75 years, as is typical, more typical of the Commission's practice. Next slide, please. This slide takes the range of erosion rates that have been documented in the vicinity, 2.6 to 6.4, and shows you that potential range of erosion. You can see it proceeds back through the up to the large dune feature to the bottom of the screen. Next slide. Here you can see the same effect of those erosion rates if you consider a 75-year erosion. Next slide. And this is what is projected based on those two ranges of that range of erosion rates over 100 years. Obviously, if we get higher levels of erosion over a 100-year period, much of the site is going to be put in danger. Next slide. Just one more note on sea level rise. This is an excerpt from the Pacific Institute mapping that has been recently done in the last year, looking at projected sea level rise and coastal erosion. You can see that their yellow line here, which is an estimated or extrapolated erosion line, is not inconsistent with the projected erosion lines that the staff has presented in the staff report. The question of sea level rise is a significant uncertainty here, and one major reason why we are recommending that the Commission take a conservative approach here. Next slide. Visual resources is the next significant constraint with respect to the project site. The LCP requires the protection of visual resources west of Highway 1, including specific view corridors on the site, a major dune landform on the site, and general views from Highway 1, the recreational trail, the beach, and from across the bay, such as in Monterey. The LUP requires, quote, views of Sand City's coastal zone shall be enhanced and protected in order to minimize the loss of visual resources, unquote. Next slide. This is a slide from the LUP again, and it shows you the project site. Two features to notice here: in the upper right corner of the project site is the dotted, specifically mapped view corridor in the LUP that is supposed to be kept free of structure. This is a generalized location of that view corridor and was based on the analysis of the commission at the time of LCP certification. The other feature that's shown on the site is the large dune form that is mapped in the dotted squiggly, the L, that is designated for protection both as a visual resource and as a habitat restoration area. Next slide, please. This is a zoom in on the zoning map for the certified zoning for the area, and here you can see again the habitat restoration overlay district that is specifically mapped on the site and has specific standards that I'll speak about in a moment. But that corresponds to the visual LUP map. Next slide. This is a staff approximation of the dune feature that is mapped and assumed to be protected with respect to visual resources on the site. Next slide. And this is that same dune feature overlaying on an aerial of the site. Next slide. This is a view of the applicant's grading plan. Grading from related to the project would constitute approximately 88% of the area above mean high tide, totaling about 28 acres of the site. We believe that this grading is excessive and inconsistent with the LCP. That's excessive landform alteration. Much of it is not necessary in order to provide an economic use on the site. The grading that you can see here includes recontouring and lowering of the protected dune feature on the left, lower left of the site, the L feature. And also to the right, bottom right of the site, you can see that a new dune feature would be created, a berm of sorts in that vicinity, which I'll speak to in a minute. Next slide. Staff, in order to address visual impacts, did a GIS visual analysis as one of the mechanisms to understand the potential views. These are illustrative views that we have mapped using GIS and topographic elevations from Highway 1. Much of the site is visible, and you'll get more detail on that in a minute. Next slide. This is an illustration of one of those views that can be had across the site from Highway 1. And with respect to this slide, the dune that would be created on the right, lower right portion of, or in this slide, the upper right in that vicinity would begin to encroach into this illustrative view, for example. Next slide. And here is a view in the northbound direction across the site, views that could be had of the site. Next slide. This is from the final EIR addendum. This just gives you a better view of the grading that would be involved with the large landform, the dune that would be created or berm that would be created in the lower right. And I also wanted to point out here the parking for public access that would be located in the foreground of that dune feature in the immediate foreground view from Highway 1. Next slide. Again, just a reminder of the elevations and some of the visual concerns. Based on our analysis of these elevations, the grading, we are recommending that the commission find that the project is inconsistent with the visual resource policies, particularly with respect to protection of existing dune landforms and existing views across the bay. Next slide. These are some illustrative photos that can be seen from Highway 1. This is a southbound view. Next slide. Southbound view, again, directly across the site towards Monterey Peninsula and Monterey Cannery Row. Next slide. And again, another southbound view across the site. Next slide. And finally, as you continue southbound, you begin to get the views blocked by the protected dune landform that is identified in the LCP. Next slide. These are illustrative northbound views, the much shorter views, but views that can be had as you're heading north on Highway 1. Next slide. Next slide. And next slide. I believe the next one is the beginning of a video that we've created from Highway 1 in order to give you a better feel for the visual, the views that can be had, and that they aren't just little snippets, but in fact significant views in staff's opinion across the site as you're going southbound. Play the slide, please. This is coming through Fort Ord, and then right in this vicinity is the property line a little further. And then the view opens up at this point across the site, across the ocean to Monterey. Play. And then this again is an existing dune landform that would be graded down somewhat, and then the dune that would be created would extend to the right from this at roughly that same elevation across to the right, blocking those blue water views. And this is where the entryway of the hotel would be. And then again to the large dune landform, which is often used to by people for messages. Next slide. This is a similar video going northbound. Play, please. A large dune. And then here's where the there would be some grading down in this vicinity, and then opening up of the next little hillock right here, where the entryway would occur. But here you can see there are blue water views across the site again, and here the project would be visible. Next slide. And then the created berm would begin to the north or up coast of this hillock form here. And so much of the blue water view that you're going to see in a moment would be obscured. And just for the record, these are videos that the staff took from one of its state cars in the last week or so. As you can see, there are significant views across the site from Highway 1. Our analysis, based on both GIS and looking at the site plans and materials and physical observations, suggests that the site, the proposal is too large and incurs in these views to a significant degree and is not consistent with the LCP. Next slide. Moving on to natural resources, as I mentioned at the outset of the presentation, the commission is required to address the issues on the site without considering the ESHA policies of the LCP. The court made a judicial determination that there is no ESHA on the site. Nonetheless, there are natural resource protection policies in the LCP that the commission is obligated to consider. In particular, the LCP designates the dune feature that I've identified previously for habitat restoration and open space. It also requires that development be consistent with the protection of, quote, natural resources, and new and land uses must prevent impacts to adjacent ESHAs. Next slide. Again, here's another slide in the LUP identifying coastal resources, and you can see on the project site there's a specifically mapped dune feature that is identified for dune stabilization and restoration. That site, as required in the LCP, must remain in open space and not be graded except as part of a habitat restoration program. Next slide. Again, there's the dune feature that is protected on the site. Next slide. This is an excerpt from the EIR documentation showing you some of the other resources, natural resources on the site that would be impacted by the proposed project. Resources include Monterey spine flower, which is listed as threatened by the federal government, the snowy plover listed by federal government as threatened. The site is also generally part of the Monterey dune system, which has been recognized as an extremely important and rare coastal ecosystem. There's also Smith blue butterfly and buckwheat habitat identified on the site. Next slide. The applicant has proposed totaled is a little over 23 acres of habitat restoration, and this is the illustration of that in the applicant's materials. You can see that much of the proposed restoration area would occur actually in the building area and the development envelope, and this would be part of the vegetated roofs and et cetera. We do not feel that much of this area should be considered in terms of its habitat restoration value, given the proximity and adjacency to the development itself. Whether or not it would function as habitat is not clear to us. Next slide. This slide may be a better approximation of the habitat restoration that could reasonably expect it to function as dune habitat, the conservation easement areas where development would not be allowed. Next slide. This is a mapping of change in distribution of Monterey spine flower on the site. And you can see that the distribution has changed somewhat over time. Next slide. This is our effort to capture the general distribution of that Monterey spine flower resource. And in particular, when you're looking at dune systems like this, it's important to think about the seed bank and the fact that there's lots of ebb and flow and natural restoration of a sort occurring all the time on this site. Next slide. To give you an indication of this, this is an aerial of the site in 1987, soon after the sand mining ceased. And then next slide. You can see how it's become vegetated much more in the areas that used to be devoid of vegetation, and this is the area where much of the spine flower is occurring. Next slide. Finally, we've identified inconsistencies with the requirement to protect adjacent Esha. Here you can see Fort Orne Dune State Park to the upcoast of the site. The commission has found this site to be Esha. It's over 900 acres of state park, a dune habitat. That includes snowy plover nesting and other dune functions, and we don't believe that the project has adequately considered the potential impacts to this adjacent Esha. Next slide. Finally, the staff report goes into some detail on traffic circulation and public access issues related to the project. To be brief here, the highway and road capacity in the area is highly constrained. The project, in our view, does not provide adequate mitigation for either direct or cumulative impacts to traffic and circulation. With respect to the public access that's included in the project, there is significant public access proposed, including vertical and lateral accessways down to the shoreline. That's generally adequate, in our view, with respect to what the LCP and the Coastal Act require, although we do discuss certain minor changes that would be needed in any future approval of a project at this site. Next slide. Just to bring it back all together, this is a compilation of some of the constraints that I went through today, showing you some of the illustrative views, the location of the spine flower, the location of the large dune form that's protected by the LCP, and in this case, the potential coastal erosion for 75 years based on the range of erosion rates that we've identified in the staff report. So you can see the site is highly constrained by different resource considerations. However, we want to emphasize, and particularly in response to the applicant's materials, that these are not necessarily no build zones, these constraints. Rather, they are an indication of where the site is more constrained as opposed to less constrained. Some of these are more significant than others. For example, the LCP is clear that the dune form mapped must be protected and restored as habitat. That's an area that probably should not be developed. On the other hand, the coastal erosion question is a matter of getting more specific about what the economic life is and projecting a site that would be safe based on the adopted or anticipated conservative assumptions about sea level rise and coastal erosion. So that would fall in the range there somewhere. And finally, the spine flower is not considered Esha. However, it is a sensitive resource, and we would look for feasible alternatives that would minimize impacts to that area. Next slide. This circle is not a development envelope. It is simply an indication, in our view, where the least constrained portion of the site is and where the most significant development program ought to be considered. And this, again, is not intended to be any sort of development envelope, but simply an indication of where we believe the site is least constrained and that the applicant ought to be focusing on for future development. Next slide. And finally, the staff report does at points go into some detail on project changes that would be necessary to address resource constraints. including a setback for 75 years of project erosion, providing a contingency plan for removal of development, avoiding and restoring the protected dune feature, avoiding blocking blue water views from Highway 1 with artificial dune building, not grading down the fore dune unnecessarily, which I didn't go into detail on, further reducing and minimizing visual and natural resource impacts through a smaller scale resiting and design, and finally reducing intensity and providing enhanced traffic generation mitigation. Next slide. So that concludes the staff presentation at this point, and we have more detail if you would like.
Thank you, staff. First, I think we'll go to the commission and check on ex parte communications. So let's do that first, and then I think we'll probably take a break before we start the full hearing. Okay? Commissioner Shajian?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I read mine earlier, mixed it up with the consent. If that's acceptable, fine. If not, I'll read it again.
I guess, counsel, is it all right to incorporate Commissioner Shajian's previous ex parte? It was for this item and not the consent calendar, or does he need to restate it?
We can incorporate it by reference.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We'll have Priscilla, if Priscilla could mark that on the transcript, we'll incorporate that by reference.
All right. Thank you. Any other? Commissioner Sanchez?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On Monday, December 7th at 9 a.m. in Oceanside, I did meet with Dave Grubb of the Sierra Club. He indicated that the Sierra Club's position was to support staff's recommendation to deny. The proposed project is inconsistent with a variety of LCP requirements and Coastal Act provisions. It lacks adequate water supply, would not avoid or minimize hazards over its lifetime, would block and otherwise impair significant public views, would not protect dune landforms and natural resources, and would exacerbate Highway 1 traffic problems. It also has not assured that maximum public access would be provided, and therefore they agree with staff's recommendation to deny the permit.
Thank you. Any other commissioners? Commissioner Blank?
Yes, Madam Chair. On December 4th at 11 a.m., I met with the applicant and his counsel, and that ex parte is on file. And then I received an email on December 4th from Lenny Roberts of San Mateo Orca, and it said, local colleagues and many activists up and down the coast support the staff recommendation for denial of this project as grossly inconsistent with the LCP and Coastal Act.
Okay. Commissioner Stone?
Thank you. I have ex partes on file, and in addition, I received a voicemail from Rita D'Alessio of the Ventana chapter of the Sierra Club on the 4th of December, and they are in support of staff's recommendation.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Juan?
Yes. Wednesday evening of this week, I was at a former Commissioner Trent Orr's house, and former Commissioner Meg Caldwell was there, and she made a quick comment to me that wanted to know if I was aware that the erosion rate in this area was most recently determined to be 3 to 5 feet per year. And actually, she may have said it to be even more than that, but that's how I remember it.
All right, thank you. Any other ex partes? Mine are on file. So with that, I have several speaker slips, and we're going to probably take the rest of the morning on this issue. We're going to take a five-minute break right now, and then we'll come back and start the hearing process.
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Counsel.
I just want to remind, I know the commissioners know this, I want to remind the audience that because a hearing is in process and the ex parte communication disclosures have already occurred, please do not approach or speak to the commissioners about this item. There is a hearing in process, and everything that's going to be said should be said on the mic so that people can respond in kind. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Take a five-minute break. So I'd ask the commissioners to return to the dais. And Ms. Vanessa, would you please?
I know.
Commissioners? Okay, thanks. Okay, we'd like to go ahead and start the hearing. And let me look to the applicant, the applicant's representative, and let's talk about time.
Yes, Madam Chair. The applicant would like to request about an hour presentation. I have a PowerPoint presentation.
Your name as well.
I'm sorry, Sherry Damon, Damon Law Offices, on behalf of Security National Guarantee. And given the size and complexity of this project and the fact that this is the first time the commissioners have had an opportunity to see the project from the applicant's perspective, we've prepared a PowerPoint presentation, and we're estimating about an hour. My comments are written, so I will go through them very quickly. But
you can submit those to us as well. So I'm going to actually grant 25 minutes and 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to thank the staff for their presentation on this, and I will try to go quickly. Where's our PowerPoint presentation?
While they're getting their PowerPoint presentation together, Madam Chair, I just want to point out for the record that this commission deals with highly complex matters on a regular basis, and the timing that that you're allowing here is not unusual in light of the fact that you have staff written reports and written materials that have been submitted, and in terms of the Commission's dealings with other very complex matters that come before you.
All right, thank you. We're holding the time for you until your PowerPoint's ready, so just take your time on that. We won't start the clock until you have everything set up.
Ed, are you ready to go? All right. Well, I think we're ready to proceed. So the applicant is here today with a modified Monterey Bay Shores Echo Resort project, which responds to the issues which were raised by the coastal staff in their staff report on December 2000 to the city-approved project. And I bring that to the Commission's attention because it's that original project which was remanded to you by the Court of Appeal in the SNG versus Coastal Commission case. Since that 2000 denial of the project by the Commission, much has happened. The Court in 2008 ordered the Commission to rehear the old project, taking into account project modifications, the Court of Appeal ruling, and specifically that there is no environmentally sensitive habitat areas on this property. The Court also specifically ordered that the standards of review for the project are specifically set forward in Sand City's certified LCP at the time of the application. It's really important to note that the time of this application was in 2000. It's not 2009. We believe that what you have before you today as a modified Echo Resort project not only addresses staff's 2000 concerns, but also complies or exceeds the standards required by the Coastal Act and the Sand City LCP, and is the most environmentally sustainable design project conceived on the California coast. The project before you today is almost 50% smaller than the LCP allows, and 31% smaller and less dense than the previous city-approved project, with a smaller bulk and mass and footprint, a setback that is further from the bluffs, less grading, and I should note on the grading that staff said there was 600,000 cubic yards of grading for this modified project. But the project that you reviewed in 2000, which was improperly denied in 2000, included 900,000 cubic yards. So there's substantially less grading, less disturbance of habitat area, less visibility, and over one half less water use than the previous project in 2000. Public parking, public access to the beach, vista points have been enhanced markedly, as have been the visitor-serving facilities. These modifications were specifically made to address those concerns that staff raised in 2000. It is my understanding this is the first time the Commission has seen this project as modified, And as we previously have asserted, we think this kind of a project proposal can be a model for development and future development and redevelopment along the coast with its environmentally sustainable features. We are hopeful the Commission will inquire beyond the staff report and presentation to give this project a fair evaluation. Our consultants are here to present the Echo Resort more fully and to elaborate on our concerns with the staff's analysis and the corresponding findings. We have submitted a lengthy comment letter dated December 4th pointing out issues and concerns with the staff methodology and evaluation on the project modifications. And this morning, we submitted additional comments to the staff's additional 15-page supplemental report, which I received late yesterday afternoon with less than 5 hours of time to respond. Staff is wrong in its analysis and standards of review, frequently using speculative assumptions and exceeding generally the jurisdiction of this commission. As a general review overview, we have issues with the analysis and findings. For example, if you make the findings encouraged by your staff today, you will have effectively rendered this property unbuildable. This would be a regulatory taking. Up until today, staff contended that some smaller project might be viable and thus constraints do not render the property unbuildable. But state and federal laws require the staff to outline feasible alternatives or with specificity what an applicant must do to comply with its rules and regulations. Today is the first time I am seeing any kind of a building envelope or any indication that there is about 2-acre area that staff thinks is appropriate for developing with its constraints overlay. I don't think that affords the applicant the ability or the right that it needs to try to respond adequately to the staff's outlined constraints. Instead, staff has left the applicant with uncertainty as to what policies it would concede if the property was small enough. Additionally, if you make the finding encouraged by the staff relative to the water supply alone, you will have enacted a temporary taking. And why is that? Because in his staff report, the bottom line, the conclusion in the water section is staff states unequivocally, no project may be adequately evaluated until the water issue is resolved. And according to your staff's evaluation, that issue will take a great deal of time to resolve. We disagree with that, but if you take that as truth, under staff's analysis, not even a substantially smaller project would be able to come forward without a water distribution permit. We don't believe the LCP requires a water distribution permit, and that the Coastal Act does not allow or does not authorize you to apply those policies, the Coastal Act policies or the LCP policies, in a way which will effectuate a taking unless you purchase the property. These are big and costly issues that the Commission may want further information about, as the economic value of this property alone is in the several hundreds of millions of dollars. And we have spent several millions of dollars going through your process, first in 2000 with many reports, and then, as identified in that report, the supplemental reports which we submitted with the project modifications. And now we are just learning today that there is a small site that may be possibly considered at some future date. We have previously provided staff with the financial feasibility information that outlines the minimum development necessary. Yet your staff has steadfastly ignored this information and failed to communicate with the applicant on or the city on these points. We believe the findings are not supported by substantial evidence, either because information relied upon by staff is pending legal review and thus not substantial evidence, such as the conclusions on the water supply or sea level rise, or not within the jurisdiction of the commission to disregard the findings of experts, such as the conclusion of TAMZ and Caltrans regarding the adequacy of traffic mitigations, or changing the standards which applied at the time the original project was submitted, which is in 1998, or non-compliant with the provisions of the 2008 court decision, such as application of non-LCP standards, or standards which were not in effect at the time of the application, or non-site-specific information, such as the fact that this property has experienced accretion or building of the beach, not recession. We are concerned with getting a fair and partial evaluation of the project modifications because it appears that the standards applied by staff are completely different from the 2000 standards, more onerous and more targeted to assuring that no development occurs on this site, not even an environmentally sustainable one. We have provided draft conditions of approval, which have been reviewed by city staff and which commission staff should have discussed both with us and City of Sand City. Likewise, their position that a smaller building envelope could be acceptable to them should have been discussed. That was not discussed, despite repeated efforts to engage in communications. The conditions of approval were presented to your staff well before the May 2009 hearing, yet we have never heard anything about them, nor has Sand City, nor did your staff evaluate them. We've asked repeatedly for staff to sit down with us and your attorneys to have an open discussion. That has not occurred. We've received no written responses to our previous written comments on the, and we've already talked about that. I'm just skip through here. Yes, all right, I'll just go here quickly. Let me further elaborate on the water issue. The project, as originally amended, will use 63 acre feet instead of 110 acre feet. I think that there's that staff here clearly confuses the issue of water supply with the issue of water delivery. The adjudication order clearly addresses the issue of water supply for this project. I think that's really an important point. SNG received a court-ordered right of water supply of 149 acre feet from the Seaside Basin. It is important to note that all the major well owners were included in that lawsuit, including CalAmp and including the Water Management District, so the impact of other wells in the area was considered as part of that adjudication order, as was the Water Management District's position on those reports regarding the use of water in the Seaside Basin. The LCP does not require a water distribution permit. The issue of delivery is also governed by the adjudication order. CalAmp, as a co-defendant, is authorized to serve SNG's private water supply. So it's a misnomer for staff to assert that it's somehow CalAmp's water that's being supplied to this project. That's just simply incorrect. With respect to how the water gets delivered, the Water Management District may have some continuing discretion, but that's an issue which we discussed earlier, which is the subject of litigation. The applicant has also entered into a front-loading agreement with CalAmp to clarify that there is absolutely no way that any Carmel River water could ever be used on this property. That agreement has been provided to your staff. In conclusion, we request that you either approve this project with conditions of approval incorporated into our December 4th letter or remand it back to staff so issues can be resolved and discussed with Sand City and we can come back for rehearing after the water distribution permit is resolved. I expect that hearing to occur in March and I hope you will consider taking that action. Thank you for your consideration and I'm going to turn it over to Paul Kephart from Rana Creek. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Paul Kephart from Rana Creek. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. Thank you. Did you get the previous Paul
Kephart? Could you state your name again for the record?
Paul Kephart from Rana Creek. I'm happy to have the opportunity to speak with you about the ecological design attributes, and I do appreciate staff recognition of the sustainable design that we put forth here. We spent quite a lot of time in terms of constraint analysis, and I also was, along with the architect, surprised to see the overlay presented by staff today, because we considered the dune morphologies, we considered the historic mine site here, and masked the large proportion of the building within the historic disturbed areas. In regard to the morphology of the structure, we also designed the structure so that it would fit into the dunes and also mimic and simulate dune processes with an idea that we'd restore biodiversity as a part of structure, ecological function as a part of structure. I wanted to make note of staff's finding that the structure itself would not function ecologically, and our recent findings from the California Academy of Sciences has shown that we're seeing 50% greater species diversity of flying creatures and insects on the roof of the restored vegetation than anywhere in the entire Golden Gate Park. So this is a viable option for restoring habitat, and we've seen this throughout the world. Basel, Switzerland is leading the charge in terms of studying biological and ecological function as part of our community and as a part of our structure. And I'd like to see you take that into consideration with this and future projects. Now, while Esha isn't a part of the project, the applicant has put forth plans to restore 1.4 acre of spine flower as part of the structure and as part of the erosion control, 3.2 acres of Smith's blue butterfly, and then also set up a long-term active management and monitoring plan for snowy plovers. In regard to water conservation, we put forth the first gray water system, commercial gray water system, in Monterey County that would reduce the water consumption by 50% over a similar commercial building of this kind and use. That was reviewed by the State Water Quality Board and given a great thumbs up. Also, the Monterey Peninsula Water Management Board also was happy to see a gray water system and water conservation measures. This is also a zero runoff site that all of the stormwater is collected and captured as a part of the site and structure and then reused as part of the program. Some of the kinds of low impact sustainable development options include the living roofs, bioswales and retention basins. There's a large botanic garden planned and also a wastewater treatment facility. In terms of the natural ventilation and daylighting, the site was considered to utilize the breezes to limit and decrease the amount of energy use for air conditioning or conditioning buildings. And finally, with light, also we're looking at clean alternative energy sources and mixing those alternative energy sources, both solar and wind. This is a cross-section of the natural ventilation where air would come into the plenum or the lower part of the building and up through vegetated walls and naturally ventilate the place. Regarding light, the building was juxtaposed within the dunes and placed in order to capture the sunlight to lower energy use and also to highlight views, reducing consumption. This is a designed schematic showing how the eaves of the structure were placed to allow natural light to come into the structure. And then from a energy and vegetation standpoint, we integrated both vegetation and solar power. Solar power is around 30% more efficient when surrounded by vegetation because it lowers the ambient air temperature. We've dropped the energy consumption of the structure because of the cogeneration of wind and solar and geothermal by 50% of that of a typical structure of this size. This is a little cartoon illustrating those cogeneration activities. And then in regard to building life cycle, I was also happy staff acknowledged this, that the building is designed in a modular fashion, so it was designed for decommissioning long-term after the life of the project. It could be removed and recycled. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is John Kasunich. I'm with Harl Kasunich. We are the coastal geotechnical engineers of record. What I'm really doing today is responding to the addendum that was presented to us yesterday afternoon from coastal staff. We have responded with formal letters to their prior reports, and you have copies of those. It's important to realize that in December 2003, HKA did a coastal recession evaluation of the Sand City shoreline. That was a very vigorous review of what Moffitt and Nickel had done in 1989. And we took into account all of the historic information as well as the projections of sea level rise then. We have continued to do that through today. The project site, since I've been working on it for 16 years, has not eroded one bit. It's very obvious with the man-made berm that was placed from the downcoast to the upcoast edge. You can see that clearly as a layperson or as a scientist. The surveys that were done in 93 and 2007 on the site also show the time period that we reviewed and developed shoreline recession rates included the 98 El Nino. I'd like to also state that Ed Thornton's study, which has been quoted often by coastal staff, also included the 1998 El Nino. Thornton presented 6 feet of erosion from 97 to 204, a quarter mile up coast. In those 7 years, that's less than 1 foot per year. I realize that it's an episodic event when the large ones come, like 98 and 83. The sand does accrete back over time from those large events. I also want to state that staff's been using an recession rate of 2.4 feet per year as the applicant's erosion rate for setbacks. That's clearly not right. We have been using 3.04 feet per year, which includes an uncertainty factor and sea level rise. We have then added a very conservative slope stability setback, which puts the project at least 30 feet additional back. It's important to realize that. The Hapke and Reed study from 1933 till present was also used by staff in their original response and their addendum. Quoting figure 23 from that study, our evaluation of figure 23 and Hapke and Reed's measurements include erosion rates of 0 to 1.1 meter per year, not 1.8 meters per year. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, Ed Gondor, thank you very much for allowing us to present it. I wish we had more time. It's very difficult in such a short time to cover matters. But I want to hit a couple points that staff presented. Slide number 42. We presented to staff a view corridor drive going down Highway 1. The blue water are actually 3 seconds in length. The staff stopped at different locations, but in fact it's 3 seconds going south, and we have complied with all the LCP standards and Coastal Act. Slide number 44, in fact, what staff is doing is using ESHA as a functional equivalence on natural resources, visual land and hazards that is clearly forbidden by the court order. Slide number 57 relates to the size of the semicircle that staff has all of a sudden sprung on all of us. By my estimate, it's probably about 1 to 2 acres. Maybe a yurt could fit on that. But, by the way, not even a yurt could fit in that, because that would stand in the view corridor from Fort Ord, which incidentally came years after this project was approved by Sand City. So it clearly doesn't apply, but that semicircle doesn't even have an access point. So these are the three main points that I wanted to cover. Let me just move on here to, we're going to skip the mixed-use project elements. And we're going to go to, if you take coastal staff's, incidentally, this is what the project looks like from across the bay, barely see the project. I also want to take notice of the model which we have below. It gives you a much sense of appreciation in terms, much better sense of the adjoining land dune forms and how the project fits on site. In terms of staff, they presented numerous constraints, none of which are LCP standards. The 75-year at 6.4, they actually presented the 100 as well. If you actually extend the 100 southward to Monterey, you take out Highway 1, you take out the hotels, you take out the condos. In fact, you take out the entire coastline into Monterey, and there's no access. They introduced the landforms as a, and I'm just using here four constraints as an example. They introduced four-door dune state parks, which means you cannot have views from the state parks, and the spine flower site, which they said you ought to put your project southwest of the spine flower. If you put it southwest, you're actually west of their setback, so that's an absurdity in and of itself. If you overlay these things, and again, because of constraints here, this is what you get on the right side, the dashed red line. In fact, you get a tiny strip on the north east corner over the parking. By the time you put constraints on it, namely setbacks and access to the northern property, you've got a non-buildable site. Here's what happens on the right. If you extend the, and you could see it by the red line all the way down to Monterey, the entire coastline is taken out. Okay? Now, one more comment. Former Central Coast Commissioner David Armanasco sent a letter to staff yesterday. I just received it, and I thought it was appropriate to evoke his comments. I was amazed by Mr. Gonder's sensitivity for the coastal site and the environmental imagination utilizing the visionary design for the eco-resort. I should say that Armanasco, Commissioner Armanasco and Commissioner Juan are the original, if I'm correct, original folks, that commissioners that appealed the project, and here he's saying, look what a great job, look at the public access, look at this potential for a globally recognized unique project on a coastal. This new design allows for interpretation and appreciation of the magnificent Monterey Bay Sanctuary. I believe this is one of those rare projects that has dramatically transformed from an ugly duck, his words, to an extraordinary futuristic gem. I recommend approval of the eco-resort coastal development. Former Coastal Commissioner Armanasco. Let me just summarize. Yeah, I'm on the last slide, so I apologize. In summary, we would like the Coastal Commission to approve the project. We certainly like to work with staff. I mean, we've said it numerous times. And, you know, try to get a dialogue, and I think the city is representing the same point of view. But you have in front of you a globally recognized environmental project that has met the LCP standards in the Coastal Act, and we're asking that you approve the project with a master set of conditions, and that master set of conditions contains a provision which allows a subsequent approval of the water. We're doing that because staff has flipped on that position and said, no, we want it before, and that's in fact the way the writ is written. So today, as I stand here before you, I think it's time to approve this, to move on. You have an amazing local project. 500 green jobs are going to come along with this. And at this time of a financially distraught economy, I think both the environment and the economy ought to merge into a beautiful, approved project. Thank you very much,
All right,
Madam Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Next, I'd like to hear from the city. And I don't know, there are several city staff members have signed up. I don't know if you have a designated speaker or if you're all going to speak. Sand City. City Attorney.
Madam Chair, to identify myself, I'm David Pendergrass. I'm the mayor of Sand City. Some of the commissioners have seen me way back, come before you. It's been a while. One thing that I need, I'm going to yield to staff, but just say something here that incredibly important.
Could I just establish a time with you, sir?
Oh, yeah.
For your comments with 3 minutes.
I get to start again? Okay.
Would 3 minutes be all right?
Okay. Yeah, I think we can do it. Anyway, we had through years of confrontation, we had a settlement. The late senator, 16-year senator, Henry Mello, sat down with us and said, look, the coastal development on regards the west side of Highway 1, that would mitigate all of the four-door reuse authority, the closure of four-door, all the projects involved. Sand City deserved reasonable development. He sat the Conservancy, the Coastal Commission, Mr. Douglas knows this, and the partners, the local park district, state parks, and everyone concerned, 50 of us sat in his office, and he said, look, I want you to work this out, and it took a year to do it. Tough as it was, we came out with what's called a coastal accord. 80% of our coast, even though still we designate to protect the property owners, they could build but have rights, full value of their property, not zero. That two areas of our coast, this one we're talking about, and the one that we bought the other a sand mining site, Monterey Sand Company. That's another project that will be coming before you shortly. We also bought the sand mining processing site in the inner part of the city, which is now a four-story design center. It's an RDA project, redevelopment project. So our adversary said, give us a level playing field. So we did. My letter of December 8th, Mr. Douglas knows the history very well. I keep referring to him because nobody's left who knows this. I've been involved since 1978. I've been mayor last month, 31 years. I am a member of the Water Master Board, the Seaside Adjudication. I'm a member of the Monterey Peninsula Water Management District, representing the mayor. I know full well the CDO, the cease and desist order, has nothing to do with the Seaside Basin. So there are rights integrated here, but our city has taken tremendous steps to work with your staff, and you have absurdly, things that are on this today are exaggeration. There's a speaker I think you'll have today, Mr. Thornton, who was once authority of the Dune. I think he's retired now. He told me at a study at the Association of Monterey Bay Area Government, ordinated by the state, in which a study was done, he said, Mayor Pendergrass, you might be interested to know that erosion has pretty much stopped on your coast. I have lived there 66 years. I should know what's happening there. I saw the state of California plow right through those dunes and created Highway 1. Those are not pristine dunes, and you know that. And the picture you saw of 87 about the sand mining site, which was Lone Star, and then you couldn't see. You said there were vegetation. I just have a second.
Right.
Okay.
Wrap it up,
that,
sir.
That vegetation is ice plants. Those are non-native. So you need to zoom in what's really there. So as you know, we fully support, we did the addendum to support this project. I think it's only fair, the level playing field, that you approve this. And if you want to talk about it, one thing that really concerns me is staff will not verbally speak to these applicants. That's unprofessional. We did that when we were kids, when we didn't like somebody. So I think we need to be a little more professional. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mayor. James Heisinger. And Steve Natarazzo and Todd Kruper. Whatever order you like.
Hello again. Thank you very much. This is Steve Natarazzo again, Community Development Director and City Administrator for Sand City. And I also have a master's degree in urban and regional planning. I want to talk about that criterion first. When you're doing planning, as the Coastal Commission did in 1984, they looked at the socioeconomics of the Monterey Peninsula and said, there's a great demand for visitor-serving commercial use. And our LCP is replete with encouraging visitor-serving commercial use, as it does on this site, 650 units. In 1990, the Coastal Commission did one of its first and only periodic reviews on LCPs in Sand City and said, really, your densities are too big. We realized you had a redevelopment need based on the egregious land uses that existed, sand mining, corporation yards, sewer treatment plant, and a regional dump at the time. So they encouraged an economic incentive to allow visitor-serving commercial uses. But they said, please come back with clustered use, encourage public acquisitions, and have much less density in some areas. We've done all of that, and the applicant has done that. This is much less density than 650 units. It's in one of those clustered areas as recommended in the periodic review, and it also conforms with the 1996 MOU, which encouraged public agencies to acquire park properties north and south of this Tioga area boundary line. So as far as the city staff is concerned, we've done everything possible to conform not only with the LCP, but also direction of your commission through the years on land use in Sand City. And I'll conclude as a final comment. Being an urban planner, your key concern is land use policy. And the land use policy here, after evaluating all the economic and environmental and viewshed constraints back in 1984, said 650 units is okay for a property this large, 39 acres. We now see a building envelope recommended by your staff that shows 1 to 2 acres, and it's very difficult to put 650 units, it's impossible, on 2 acres with access requirements and so forth. So it really doesn't make sense from a technical standpoint, and it doesn't make sense from our working relationship that we've had. It was a comment made in Mr. Gondor's comment letter, which is appropriate. The goalpost keeps getting moved. We keep meeting that goal, but we wish you would go back to your periodic review and see how well we've conformed to those recommendations. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. James Heisinger, followed by Todd Kruper, and that will end the city's presentation.
Madam Chair, members of the commission, my name is James Heisinger. I'm the city attorney for Sand City, a position I've held for over 2 decades. The use and density, the type of use and the density of use on this site is based on Coastal Act policies and constraints which were analyzed at the time this LCP was certified by this commission in the mid-80s. The preferred use that was stated in the LCP for this site was not a boutique hotel. It was a mixed-use visitor-serving use with a maximum density stated in the LCP of 650 units. There was a decision at the time this LCP was certified to allow development on this site of 650 units, and as your staff points out in its report, the density is a primary indicator of mass, scale, and intensity of development that was envisioned and allowed under the LCP. The staff report doesn't challenge the use which is allowed under the LCP for this site. What it does, of course, challenge is the proposed scale. Remember, the density allowed under the LCP is a stated number. It is a maximum, but it is a stated number of 650 units. That is something much different than a boutique hotel. Reasonable people created this law in the mid-80s, and reasonable people have interpreted it over the years. If laws can't be understood by people, they're useless. What is suggested today in your staff report is not an interpretation of existing law. It is a change in the law. And we would the city respectfully request that you not act to attempt to change the law in a context of a permit proceeding. We respectfully suggest to you that you do continue this matter, that you direct your staff to meet with the applicant and the city to develop conditions which will address staff's concerns, the city's concerns, everyone's concerns regarding development constraints on this site. But let's start from, as the mayor has said, a level playing field. Let's start with an assumed density that's a lot closer to 650 units than it is to zero. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Todd Krueper.
Thank you, Commissioners, Madam Chair. My name is Todd Krueper. I'm a council member, artist, business owner, and educator in the city of Sand City. And there's nothing that I can say that my colleagues have not brought up that you all don't know. But I would want to acknowledge that we found it quite easy to find a parking spot when we came in today, being that the state's on a furlough day. And I just wanted to mention to you all, this is about jobs in our community. My neighbors are out of work. We need jobs. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, council member. The next speaker is Paul Bruno, followed by Ed Thornton and Craig Orbelian.
Madam Chair, members of the board, my name is Paul Bruno. I'm the vice chair of the Seaside Groundwater Basin Watermaster. I'm speaking here today as a board representative for the Coastal Private Pumpers. SNG is a coastal private pumper and a party to the basin adjudication. The Watermaster is an arm of the court that was created to manage the adjudicated basin. Its nine-member board includes four mayors and a county supervisor from the overlying jurisdictions. The Monterey Peninsula Water Management is also a party to the adjudication with a seat on the Watermaster board. It is bound by the amended decision. Let me be clear. SNG's water is indisputable. Indisputable. Per the amended decision, SNG has an alternative production allocation which far exceeds their needs. SNG's allocation is a priority right in the basin. Even if the pumping in the basin was ordered to be drastically reduced, SNG's water supply would not be impacted. The Watermaster has unanimously ruled, and Judge Randall has agreed, that SNG's plan to deliver its water allocation through CalAmp's infrastructure is in keeping with the amended decision. In fact, their proposal represents the best practices outlined in our basin management plan. Please be aware that the court has reserved jurisdiction over the interpretation, enforcement, and implementation of the amended decision. They have the final say. In no uncertain terms, Judge Randall has found that the Water District had improperly withheld its approval of SNG's water distribution permit. Now, some comments about the project itself. Wow. Wow. What an incredible design. This Echo Resort is a world-class example of cutting-edge sustainable practices. Champions of the environment should be lining up to support this cutting-edge supply, cutting-edge design. It is hypocritical for those individuals to seek a denial of this project. The Monterey Peninsula has some crown jewels, including that Monterey Bay Aquarium just across the bay. When complete, I'm certain that the Monterey Bay Shores Echo Resort will be another jewel in our crown. I ask you to let go of the past. You know, think about that past plan for the site. Let go of that. This applicant has listened. Open your eyes to this visionary opportunity. I urge your support of the Echo Resort. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Ed Thornton.
Madam Chairman, Commissioners, my name is Ed Thornton. Craig Orbelian has ceded his time to me.
Well, actually, we don't accept ceding time, so if you each want to speak, that's fine, but we don't have an organized presentation. I wasn't aware that there was one. So
I believe I did have an organized presentation.
Oh, okay. So how much time are you asking for then, sir? 5 minutes?
6 minutes.
Okay.
All right. As by way of introduction, I did in a letter describe my credentials. I'm a retired professor emeritus at the Naval Postgraduate School. I'm internationally and nationally recognized expert in erosion processes. This is recognized through my receiving the International Coastal Engineering Award in 2007, which is the highest award accorded in my profession. I wrote you a letter dated December 7th, 2009, stating that in my estimation, the erosion rates utilized and the planning of the SNG project is non-conservative, being less than the historical published erosion rates, and does not adequately address the consequences of sea level rise. And using a 50-year economic life for the structure on the shoreline was inappropriate. Now, you have heard my name mentioned twice already today, so I'll make comments about that. Southern Monterey Bay was identified by the U.S. Geological Survey as the most erosive shoreline in California on average, and this is recognized as a severe problem. And all the developments to date in the Southern Monterey region have erosion problems, all of them. This includes the Ocean Harbor House condominiums and the Monterey Beach Resort, which have brand new seawalls that replaced old seawalls that came before this commission after only 40 years of life. Stillwell Hall, which was destroyed after 60 years of life. And more importantly, the Monterey Bay Sanctuary Resort, which was built only 15 years ago. And as recognized in the Regional Sediment Management Plan for Southern Monterey Bay funded by the state of California, that this resort will probably have severe erosion problems within 20 years, which would include either taking down structures or building seawalls, and that's less than 50 years. So in summary, what we've learned is that 50 years is a very short life for a structure on a highly eroding shoreline, and that non-conservative estimates of erosion rates is bad engineering that leads to catastrophe or seawalls or both. So let me be a little specific. In the various letters that I've seen recently, first of all, it says there's no erosion in the last 16 years at this site, which I've not seen documented, but I comment that erosion is highly episodic, tied to El Niños, 82, 83, 97, 98. And these are when these big events occur, and we have not had an El Niño since 97, 98 of severity. The HKA report, which is the basis for the SNG application, they state that they have only local estimates, and their estimates are based on shoreline erosion. Now, that report, the most of the controversy here is based on what are the historical rates. Historical rates used by SNG are based on an 1989 consultant report and a 2003 consultant report. Since that time, there have been several studies, including my study in 2006, and the U.S. Geological Survey studies by Hapke and Reed in 2007, Hapke, Reed et al. 2008. And these were not utilized by the consultants in making their estimates. And let me say, one doesn't have to defend peer-reviewed published erosion rates because they've already been peer-reviewed and blessed sort of by the scientific community. The differences in the application of that the applicants are arguing has to do with shoreline. The estimates by myself were based on where the dune bluff is, and in my estimation, this is where you build on the dunes, you don't build on the shoreline. The more important measure is where is the dune bluff and how is that receding back, and that's the basis of my estimates and the estimates by Hapke and Reed. And the applicants complain that my estimates are not at exactly the same place. They're both north and south. We made measurements over 500 meters that were less than 400 meters north and south, and this took into account undisturbed dune bluffs to measure how they're receding. And on the basis of those measurements and the published measurements, since they exceed the measurements by the consultants, I would say that the consultants' measures of erosion are non-conservative, and this is my big concern, using non-conservative estimates on a highly erosive shoreline. Sea level rise was taken into account by the consultants using what's called the Bruin rule, which is a highly controversial measure. I also wrote a letter on May 5th, 2009, stating I didn't think they applied that rule appropriately, and therefore they underestimated the effects of sea level rise. So let me conclude here by saying that I find the consultants' estimates of future erosion rates, which are based on sea level rise associated with climate change, and the historical rates they've used as being non-conservative.
Sorry, your time's up.
And therefore, I say that the Coastal Commission should deny this project.
Thank you, sir. Giselle Matilla, followed by Jeff Condit and Rick Alpers. And if you could move to the front row so we could make sure we have time to hear all of the speakers today. State your name for the record, sir.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. I'm Jeff Condit. I'm chair of the Advocacy Committee for the Central Coast U.S. Green Building Council and a resident of the city of Monterey. This project is an important precedent for green building practices in the Monterey Bay region. The project represents a visionary redevelopment of a former salt mine site with an opportunity to restore habitat through development. In addition, it provides coastal access and a potential boost to the local economy. It's an opportunity to bring a world-class experience to the Monterey Bay Sanctuary for residents and visitors alike, and I ask you to support this project. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir. Rick Alpers, Jordan Daniels, Max Perlman.
Good morning, Chair Neely and Commissioners. I wanted to speak today in regards to...
State your name for the record, sir.
Rick Alpers.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry about the protocol.
That's all right.
I wanted to speak today in regards to two points. First, earlier you heard testimony in regards to jobs. Very, very important opportunity here for construction jobs over a period of time, and then upwards of 175 to 200 full-time jobs as we go forward with the resort. Second, sustainable construction practices. This is an opportunity to show and allow our people to build, not our people, workers, to build a resort community that has these proven sustainable factors, and we can have them for the world to see, allowing Monterey County, to be that showplace. So jobs and sustainable practices. I urge you to support this. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Giselle Matilla.
Good morning. My name is Giselle Matilla.
Can you pull the microphone down, ma'am?
I've lived in Monterey for 50 years, and I really like the coast, and I'm opposed to the building of the project. I think it will save our dunes, it will save our birds and butterflies, and that's all I have to say. I'm not taking my 6 minutes, 3 minutes.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Did Jordan Daniels, have you been up yet? Max Perlman, Michael Kell, Mark Soto. If any of you are here, could you come forward to testify? Sarah Damron, Larry Silver. I called your name, if you could come to the front row and then just step up and give your name.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Sarah Damron, speaking on behalf of Surf Rider Foundation. Apologies, I have a little bit of a cold, so please bear with me here. While many issues face this project, which render it unapprovable as it is proposed, I'd like to speak to you specifically on the issue of water supply. While perhaps seemingly a minor issue facing this development, this issue is actually more dire and insurmountable than has been conveyed by the applicant. In the report, staff has given a very thorough analysis of these issues, but I'd like to expand on a few points and make some additional points, because water supply is an issue that this project and other proposed projects in the Monterey Peninsula face, and of course, it'll be something you'll have to deal with in the future. The project cannot supply itself through its on-site wells. Although the applicant does have a paper water right to water from the Seaside Basin, the water or the wells are not approved to produce. Significantly, an applicant or application to the Water Management District submitted in 2000 for pumping from the on-site wells was denied because pumping would have A, created or contributed to an overdrafted groundwater aquifer, the Seaside Basin. B, pumping would have resulted in an unacceptable risk of groundwater quality degradation. And C, it would have adversely impacted existing water users. The project also cannot be supplied by the local water purveyor, California American Water, directly or indirectly through transfer of rights. Staff mentioned the CDO and basin adjudication, both which require CalAmp to reduce its illegal diversions, which total over 10,000 acre feet a year. Because of these obligations to reduce its illegal diversions, CalAmp cannot supply new developments. Until CalAmp deals with the regulatory requirements to reduce diversions from both of these water sources, there is no available existing potable water supply in the vicinity for new development. And there won't be until CalAmp is able to develop another water supply project. While CalAmp is in the process of developing alternative water supplies, the earliest these sources are expected to come online is 2013. Any other new water sources or transfers, i.e. from this project, acquired in the meantime, would need to be used to offset already illegal diversions CalAmp is obligated to reduce. This is an unfortunate reality that the project proponent and other developers on the peninsula face, but it is an important reality for the commission to take into account because of potential impacts to significant coastal resources and to other water users should developments be approved in the absence of available water supply. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm just going to call these names again. Jordan Daniels, Max Perlman, Michael Kell, Mark Soto, I think it is. Okay, sir, come forward. Give your name for the record.
Larry Silver. I'm the attorney representing the Sierra Club and have represented the Sierra Club since, I think, since the year 2000 in connection with the SNG project issues. I just wanted to be sure that Chapter Chair Rita D'Alessio did address a letter in opposition to any approval of this project, which should be in the record. And also, I sent several days ago a letter to Peter Douglas and to Mike Watson, which did address the water issues. I am counsel for the Sierra Club in several cases that directly involve the application by SNG and CalAmp to the Monterey Peninsula Water Management District. And I just wanted to just very briefly say that the fact of the matter is that there is no water distribution permit that has been approved. There have been a number of assertions here concerning the water right, which is held by SNG, and I don't think anybody disputes, but that the adjudication did determine that there was a right with regard to 149 acre-feet of water. This is an overlying right, SNG has chosen not to go this route. It has chosen instead to enlist CalAmp, use the CalAmp distribution system to supply water. This has vast implications with regard to the CDO, and I think it's fair to say that despite CalAmp's statement that it won't provide any water from the Carmel River, that CalAmp has clearly not said that it will not in some way use Carmel River to serve people who are already served by the Peralta well. So the fact of the matter is, and this is before the Court of Appeal now, that Carmel River water is implicated in this. It's a cozy arrangement between CalAmp and SNG, whereby CalAmp basically can provide water to other people from the Carmel River. The point simply is that this is not just a simple matter of SNG using its overlying right to pump from underground, as is its common law right and its adjudicated right. It is using CalAm as a purveyor and using water that is pumped probably from the Peralta well. So there are a lot of complex matters here with regard to the water distribution permit. The fact of the matter is there isn't a permit. And one of the really principal features of land use regulation recognized as well in the LCP of Sand City is that there needs to be a legally available, provable water supply for the project, and this does not exist. CalAm, or rather SNG, has elected itself to inject itself into the water controversies in the peninsula by using CalAm as a purveyor. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Stephen Weinstein, Mark Massara, Roger Johnson, Steve Donahue.
Good morning. I'm Stephen Weinstein. I'm a private individual from Los Angeles. I've moved to California 5.5 years ago from New York City, and I'm setting your
and your
things
on
fire
on.
Here. Yeah. I moved here from New York 5.5 years ago and set out to build a meaningful greenhouse in Los Angeles. We retained some architects here in San Francisco. Let's move this one more time. Who had built one of the dwell houses and who subsequently built the Better Homes and Gardens House of the Year. These architects introduced us to the Monterey Bay project approximately 3.5 years ago. And I know there's been a lot of statements made to you all about how this is going to be a model once it's built, but I'll tell you that it's become a model already. My wife and I redesigned our entire project to incorporate some of the things that were coming out of this project. We've incorporated living roofs. We've incorporated a living swimming pool. We've designed a second living swimming pool for this house that we live in currently. We've incorporated some of the LEED certified capabilities that this house, that this project will have into our home. So, you know, I know there's a lot of interest in this project, but I'm here speaking as somebody who's in the process of putting some of that interest into actual practice. I think the state of California has been a beacon for many, many years as a leader in terms of protecting the environment, protecting emissions from cars, making it possible for people to do interesting, responsible things with their developments. And I'm here speaking as someone who's trying to do that. And I hope that you as commissioners will enable this project to go forward so that not just people who are studying the, you know, what's coming down the road, but the people who are actually seeing what's happening today can go and look at this project and use it as a model for themselves. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, sir. Mark Massara.
Madam Chair, Commissioners, Mark Massara, Sierra Club Coastal Programs. Commissioners, we support your staff's well-reasoned analysis and their determination that numerous significant LCP inconsistencies require that this project, as proposed today and at this time, be denied. While we sympathize with the applicant and his other litigation and various scheduling difficulties amongst and involving various agencies and courts, none of that is relevant to your analysis of this project and this LCP. In a nutshell, the project is simply way, way too big. Nearly 400,000 square feet of development, 850 parking spaces, and nearly 1 million yards of grading on a sand dune, a rare and sensitive sand dune. And therein lies the straw that breaks the back of the LCP on resource issues, geologic hazards, stability and erosion issues, visual concerns, infrastructure, traffic, water issues, and public access. All of these policy grounds
in which we take our direction from the LCP. Look just a few feet down coast at the unfortunate Monterey Beach Hotel, a virtual fortress in the waves. And those geologic issues could well create the same situation at this site if this project were approved as proposed. As I've said publicly, and to the applicant directly, this project has many positive attributes and features that are in general to be encouraged. Yet no matter how ecologically advanced a project is, you still have to assess and consider the site itself. The most environmental development in the world can still be inappropriate on the wrong site. In that regard, even if this is the right project, it must be denied for being at the wrong site. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Roger Johnson, Steve Donahue, or anyone else whose name I called earlier?
Good morning. I'm Stephen Donahue, a local resident of the Monterey Peninsula, and I'm on the executive committee of the Monterey chapter of the Surfrider Foundation. And we unanimously support the staff's recommendation to deny this project. The building, the environmental concerns that went into the actual development, we think are wonderful, very forward-thinking. It's just the absolute wrong place to build a project of this scale. And members of our executive committee have listened to the developers, have actually talked with him, and we understand the history. We just, when it came down to it, the environmental issues, future erosion, we think will become, all you have to do is, as people have mentioned, look down the beach. When you build things on living, moving sand, it's only a limited amount of time before it becomes an environmental issue, as in denial of beach access laterally, because there will be seawalls there with dangerous waves hitting into them in the winters. And I want to spot briefly quality of life. We all decided this is a really bad spot to build a very large project, whether it's erosion, whether it's visual, or whether it's water, or whether it's traffic. It's a bad idea. And I have a little bit of time left, and I just wanted to take that time to respond to some things I heard this morning from my neighbors, who I don't know, but are from the city of Sand City, which is a very small city and doesn't seem to be wanting to be part of the overall community, but just a business development zone. One-third less destruction, I heard, half the footprint of the original size, eco-resort. There are environmentally cool things going on with the building itself. It's not an eco-resort to build a building on the beach that's going to be impacting the beach in the very near future. Not in our future, because as I look around the room, we'll all be gone. But my 11-year-old's future, and all the junior lifeguards, and all the lovers of the peninsula, and when you come into the peninsula, when you come home today, and you see that beautiful view, that's when I feel like I'm home. And I don't want to see it all messed up. I also want to respond to the water issue one more time. I heard a gentleman say, and I am putting this in my own words, even if everyone else dies of thirst, we still have a right to the water. That's absurd, and we all need to be a community, and we all know the water issues, and I hope we can resolve our water issues, because I'm not against resolving them. But attitudes like that, I don't think make a good community member. Thank you.
Thank you. That's our last speaker, unless someone named that I called earlier has returned to the meeting room here. Anyone not get called to speak? All right. Then we'll bring it back to the staff for comments. Oh, I'm sorry. I need to do a rebuttal. I beg your pardon. Come on forward and do rebuttal.
Thank you. I've heard a lot of comments here, but one thing that I've heard a lot of comments. One thing that comes to mind is that after the 1996 MOU was signed, Mr. Peter Douglas came to me and said, "You're going to have an economically viable project, not a yurt." LCP policy 4.3.5 regarding erosion, we have a 50-year erosion setback per the LCP. The fact that it's going to be there for another 200 years is not important, but we have a 50-year setback. It's very clear under any standard. The site is a degraded site, and the site is also a private property. This site is excluded from the public land trust doctrine. That means the public cannot go on this beach. It's one of only three in California. And so this project opens up access to 70,000 people living on the other side of the road. And I am a Surf Rider member as well. And there are a lot of Surf Rider members who support this project. LCP 97-2 was approved by the commission unanimously in 1997, and there was a specific discussion regarding maximum density, and that discussion was 650, not 350, not 200, not 1 acre, 650 units. And we understood that. And so we responded, and we understood that, as Mr. Arbanasco called it, this was a ugly duck. We came back and responded to staff, and we modified the project accordingly. Regarding the water, I want to set the record straight, and some people here in the audience don't get it. S&G has a pumping right to 149 acre feet. This is not an abstract right. This is not a virtual right. This is a right. Right now I'm pumping water as we're speaking. We have right to pump water. We chose to pump, to have Calam pump our water from inland because this is an environmentally sensitive project. It's consistent with my philosophy, with the philosophy of the team members to do the right thing by the environment. So opening the site to the public and moving the water inland and all those things, those are great things that you could see on the model that's presented in front of you. Mr. Thornton cited the sediment management plan. In fact, the sediment management plan very specifically states that we are in the null zone, quote unquote, meaning no erosion. Mr. Kasunich addressed that, and he refuted Mr. Thornton's objective. Mr. Thornton has been an opponent of this site for as long as I can remember. Now, in addition to that, it should be noted that we're not proposing any seawalls, number one. And number two, there are binding conditions which require removal if the buildings are breached. So we have agreed to that. There's no seawalls. We're not advocating that. I would not do it as a coastal environmentalist. Now, in November, if you recall, I went down to Long Beach. And in fact, one of the nice things, I had a moment to speak with Mark Massar. And he said to me, I respect your tenacity and passion for what you're doing. And by the way, Mark, I respect your tenacity as well, touche on that. Okay? Yes, I'm very passionate about the environment and its coastal resources. I listened to staff and modified the project and invested significant sums of money in the process. You have an amazing project that's environmentally sensitive and is cutting edge. Nothing like it is proposed elsewhere in California, in Monterey, and the world. We got the cutting edge first permits just even for water savings. If today the Monterey Peninsula adopted SNG's water saving and recycling technologies, we would not have water shortage. That's a fact. We were the first one to get the permit. So I think California can show the way and lead the country with this eco-resort. And you ought to make it today a shovel-ready project, as Mr. Obama has advised we all ought to do. And I think this project meets that expectation and standards. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Now we'll go to staff.
Madam Chairman, may I just, two things. We would like to include our slides for the record and incorporate also the city's comments and letter into the record.
All right. Thank you. I think they're in the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In general, I just want to observe that we feel the staff report and the addendum that's been distributed address many, if not all, of the issues that have been raised in today's hearing. But briefly, in response to some of the comments, first, staff does want to acknowledge the environmental design and all of the sustainability concepts that are incorporated into this revised project. We think those are very interesting and exciting ideas, as some people have mentioned, and that those should be continued to be pursued in any project for this site. So we're not raising issues with those. We do have some specific questions in the staff report about the functioning of habitat restoration and some of the technical design issues that haven't been fully addressed in our view. But we're not taking issue with the sustainability and environmental concept that's being proposed. What we are concerned with is that the project is largely the same from the project that we evaluated in 2000 with respect to its scale and in intensity and size of the development and the impacts, therefore, and issues under the LCP. So in terms of changes since 2000, the things that haven't changed, we're using the same LCP policies that we used in 2000. We're applying the LCP to the best of our ability to the facts that have been presented to us. And again, notwithstanding the great design and innovative components in this project, the project is still largely the same scale in terms of footprint and intensity. And if you look at Exhibit 12 in your exhibit, you can see the footprint of the project in 2000 and the elevations, and that will give you an idea of how we don't feel the project has been redesigned. In 2000, the Commission's adopted findings made a number of observations about the scale and intensity and issues, including directing that, for example, that minimizing land disturbance appears feasible. With respect to hazards, we asked for a specific contingency plan to deal with erosion. Just to go back to the point about the potential developable area on the parcel, we're not suggesting, as I said in the presentation, that that area that we identified with the circle is the building envelope. That's not our intention. Our intention is to identify the least constrained portion of the site, a general indication of where the most significant buildings and development should be designed, and it's certainly not to suggest a size or scale of development within that area. And in fact, it may be that access to that area would be needed around the dune, protect the dune form, and through some of the spine flower occurrence. And our findings do not say that those are no-build zones. Impacts need to be better minimized. Dune building that blocks significant blue water views needs to be avoided. We think there's a project here that better protects the resources as required by the LCP, but it's not an unbuildable parcel. With respect to the densities, yes, the LCP does allow a theoretical maximum of 650 units. That's simply a calculation of 25 units per acre times the zoning on the site. That gives you 650 units. But the policy is also very clear that this is a maximum densities consistent with the constraints that apply to the site. So the issue for us is one of scale and intensity. With respect to the water issues, those are well detailed in the staff report and the addendum. I would just observe that there are differing views on the water permit issue at this point from the water master and the water district, and that matters on appeal now. We don't believe that we can make the finding, though, that there's an adequate water supply, given the significant questions that remain outstanding on that front. With respect to visual impacts, I just wanted to highlight that the views that we showed in our slides and in the videos, I should underscore that these really are the first significant blue water views as you're heading southbound. There are some snippets of blue water as you're going adjacent to Fort Ord, but this is really where the view opens up. You feel like you're arriving in the Monterey Peninsula. You look across the ocean, across the site, you see the peninsula. So these are important blue water views that we also raised issues with in 2000. And if you want more, I recognize that stopping the video doesn't quite present that view. If you want to see that, we can do that again. Finally, with respect to geology, we also have detailed those issues in the staff report and the addendum. And Mark Johnson, Dr. Johnson, has reviewed all of the evidence and participated in the preparation of the staff recommendation. He's available for questions if there are any. That would conclude staff's remarks.
All right. Thank you, staff. Bring us back to the commission. And Commissioner Wan?
I move that the commission approve coastal development permit number A3SNC98114 for the development as proposed by the applicant and recommend a no vote.
We have a motion by Commissioner Wan and a second by Commissioner Mercurimi. The maker and seconder are recommending a no vote. Following the staff's recommendation, a no vote will result in denial of the coastal development permit and adoption of the resolution and findings in the staff report. Would you like to speak to the motion, Commissioner?
Yes, very briefly. I think staff has done an excellent job in its analysis on this. I would just like to make a few comments. I have actually read the LCP, and it does reflect and refer to all of the policies in the Coastal Act. And I accept the staff's interpretation of natural. The LCP does not say this site is not natural, and it should not be interpreted as such because it's not reasonable to assume that any land that has had any human activity is no longer considered natural or subject to the LCP protections called for. Nature has, if you leave an area alone, as this one has been for quite some time, nature has a way of healing itself, and it's really a wonderful way that it restores itself. And it is just like many areas, in fact, almost every area in this state, by their definition, would no longer be considered natural simply because humans have at one point in the history done something to it. There's nothing that's absolutely pristine. And there are numerous policies protecting these dunes from grading and requiring that they be maintained in open space. As for the hazards, Southern Monterey Bay is notoriously one of the areas of the state that has the most erosion. It's very rapidly eroding, and the applicant has simply misinterpreted studies or misused them or ignored the studies that are out there. And there are natural resources on this site that need to be considered, the dunes, the landforms, and the existing, some of the listed species that are on the site. And we have letters, I believe, from the various wildlife agencies about the need and the need to protect these species. My advice to the applicant is that go out and build an actual eco resort, that one's designed to have minimal impacts on the natural resources of the area. That's my definition of an eco resort. Green building is great, and we should do it, but it's not a substitute for respecting the constraints of the land, and it does not override the policies of the LCP. I suggest you actually live up to your advertising hype and reduce the size of the development and respect natural constraints of the site.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Mercurimi, would you like to speak to the motion?
I think Commissioner Wan said it well, only to the point that I think the staff treated this project and the area and the conditions of the area is as well as I think we would hope. So I would just like to say good work to the staff. And on the point of the eco resort, I quite agree with Commissioner Wan's comments. Is something as chic sounding as an eco resort, I think that it requires us to raise the standards and frankly the obligations of the project sponsors to make sure that they do live up to a particular standard so that we do not mislead or misrepresent what the real term of an eco resort is.
All right. Any other comments from commissioners? Commissioner Bloom.
I just want to point out that I think that the sustainability aspects of this project are very impressive, and our staff called that out too. From what I can see, there's been a lot of progress between the last proposal and now. I would hope that that would continue. What I'm hearing from staff is that there still is a project here that can be built in this area, but it doesn't yet meet with the standards and the requirement that that would allow the commission to approve it.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. Anyone else? Could you please call the roll? The maker and seconder are recommending a no vote.
Commissioner Shajian?
Shadia, no. Commissioner Blank?
No.
Blank, no. Commissioner Bloom?
No.
Bloom, no. Commissioner Mercurimi? Mercurimi, no. Commissioner Schellenberger? Schellenberger, no. Commissioner Stone? Stone, no. Commissioner Wan?
No.
Wan, no. Chair Neely?
No.
Chair Neely, no. The vote is unanimous.
The Commission hereby denies a coastal development permit for the proposed development on the grounds that the development will not conform with the policies of the City of Sand City's local coastal program. Anything else, staff?
I believe that concludes the agenda for the day.
All right. Let me just, on behalf of the Commission, thank Commissioner Mercurimi for the use of the chambers here. We really enjoyed being here in San Francisco and enjoyed your town, and hope you'll invite us back again soon.
Well, I think the city and county will absolutely invite the Coastal Commission. We know, of course, that this is the headquarter area for the Coastal Commission, so we're delighted to be able to extend that. But I also want to thank my staff, and I want to thank that City Hall staff for working together with Coastal Commission staff and making this happen, and to my colleagues on the Board of Supervisors for allowing us to use these facilities. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And happy holidays.
Commissioner, happy holidays to everyone, and we'll see you in January.